This week on the Design Review, we discuss the highs and lows of landing your first design job and give you some practical advice on how to launch your career.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan.
Hello, everyone. So we're talking about landing your first job. And for a lot of designers, this is something that seems like a insurmountable hurdle. You know, job applications out there are asking for, you know, a ton of experience, or, you know, even for the seasoned veterans, sometimes the job application process can seem alien. You know, it's been, you know, who knows, 3 years, 4 years since your last design job, maybe even more, and you're out there applying again, and you need a way to show the people, you know, that you are applying to, that you're good, you know, that what your skills and what you have to offer. There's this kind of, it's just like design, you know, there's this content you have, and you have to prove it and show it to your target market.
Yeah, for sure. So what was your first job? I mean, how did you get it? And what was kind of the whole backstory to your first job?
Yeah, so I think there was definitely a ton of, like, quote-unquote design jobs before my first real design job. But I think the first job I had where I was doing, you know, what I went to school for, like UX design, and actually getting the paycheck that, like, warranted, like, a first-year, you know, actual designer professionally, was at USendIt, which is now called Hightail. And the way I got that was I knew somebody who was there from school. Mm-hmm. And so networking. And then I started, you know, doing contract work for them. And then that turned into a full-time position as the second designer there.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens a lot. You contract somewhere and then you get brought in full-time and
yeah, some people, they don't like that. They see the contract to hire and they think like, oh, this is just sort of something they're doing. But that actually is a legitimate way to get some income, get some experience, and prove to them that you are a great designer.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's first? What do we have up first on this whole episode?
Yeah, so the first thing, obviously, if you're a recent graduate and you're looking to get a job, the very first thing you're going to need to do is get your portfolio together.
The dreaded portfolio.
Yeah.
We do have an episode on portfolios, so definitely go check that out if you want more in-depth. But we're going to actually go over some specific questions that we've kind of identified and we've heard from people about portfolios. But if you want more specifics on how to build a solid portfolio that's going to get you these jobs and open up opportunities, go check that out that episode.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably the most important thing. I mean, if you're trying to be a designer, this is like the one thing that you absolutely have to have it. But why do you need a portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, actually, on that note, I think the two most important things to get hired are a great portfolio and knowing how to sell yourself. Like, just those two things alone, that's what's going to get you this job.
Yeah, for sure.
So the good thing is a lot of times the selling yourself is the hardest part. And it's something that you have to do like in the moment. Yes, you can like practice talking. You can practice your answers to questions. But a lot of times the interviews are so dynamic that only goes so far. Yeah. But the good thing about a portfolio is you can put in years of work. You can put in, you know, months and you can actually put it all together once and just walk in to an interview with confidence because you know your portfolio is solid.
Yeah. One thing I wrote is basically your portfolio shouldn't suck. You know, there's like people that try to be a little too clever. Having reviewed portfolios before, I've seen some where they just like try too hard to like be impressive, you know, and it never, I don't know, to me, it never really works.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. That's something that, you know, I've kind of dealt with too, and I think a lot of designers do, is we, especially with a portfolio, it probably comes out even more, but you want to stand out. Like, you want to be unique. You know, you're imagining them looking at like 10 portfolios and then, oh wow, who's this?
Yeah.
Who's this dude? You know, the clever tagline that he's not actually, instead of saying he's a designer, he says he like, you know, shovels pixels. I like this guy. You know, and it's just something that sort of like, you're like, okay, like, I want to be unique. But yeah, I like your approach. Like, it needs to be just solid, like, not to suck. Like, it needs to show that you're a professional.
Yeah.
And here's the work that you've done. Here's, you know, what you know about what you did. You know, here's your process. Here was your thinking. Things like that, I think, go a much longer way than trying to be unique with some, you know, crazy moving animations or some clever, you know, way you said that you're a designer. And confused, I mean, your...
You know, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's important to make it look nice and do a really good job, you know, to showcase your skills and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you're building, like, it also has to be usable, right? Like, somebody has to be able to look through your work. And if it's really complicated, or it's like really, like, I don't know, overly decorative, or, you know, it's trying to be so clever that it's actually harder to use, or, you know, something, you know, just whatever. I don't even know what I'm saying, but but if it goes too far, it can actually detract from what you really want to present yourself as, right?
Right.
So definitely be careful about how you approach it. Now, if you're a designer, do you actually have to go through the trouble of, like, building the portfolio by yourself?
I think that it's always a plus, but you don't have to. Yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, someone saying, like, I don't know, this is probably a terrible example, but, you know, like a chef or something. And yes, they know how to grow their own food. They know, you know, that maybe the biology of the food. Yeah. And, like, that's amazing. Yeah. You know, like, that is, like, a huge plus. But, like, there's plenty of talented chefs who don't know any of that stuff.
Yeah, right.
So, but again, like, you know, just having a fundamental knowledge of what you're about to design and how it gets built helps you to design better, interfaces.
Yeah.
So if that's the way that you want to express that, you know, that knowledge, then I would definitely go for it. But man, that can suck up a ton of energy and time.
Yeah.
That you could be putting in some of the more important aspects. So I would definitely not put that at the top of the list.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there's tons of services out there that will generate a really nice looking portfolio for you. All you have to do is drop in your content and, you know, it's pretty much ready to go. I think the only case is if you're sort of a designer / you know, front-end developer or something who really knows how to do it really well and can make it work across, you know, all the various platforms and devices and everything, then, and, you know, you actually want to use your portfolio as a way to communicate, I know these skills and I know what I'm doing and here's how I can demonstrate that to you, then by all means, go through the hassle of building it. But, you know, if you don't want to, or if you don't have the time, or, you know, if it's just not something you want to spend time doing, then by all means, go get, you know, Squarespace or go get something else in WordPress or whatever, right?
Yeah, I think my advice to someone who doesn't have a portfolio and is like, okay, I need to create one, a designer, is first, before you, even if you want to build one, first thing you should do is make one on one of these other sites and just focus on the content.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, you're going to have it done, which done is better than, like, you know, in progress forever and whenever trying to get the code right and make it look amazing and, you know, blow everybody's mind. So just get the content down. And that sometimes is even harder, you know, write out those long process, you know, pieces about the specific projects you want to highlight or whatever. Once that's done, you'll have it. So, you know, worst case, you can start actually applying to jobs. But then also, you know, you can move that into whatever the amazing site that you had planned anyway. So I think it's a win-win, because there's no, you know, there's very little work that goes into putting this into a Squarespace. So might as well do that.
Yeah.
All right, next question is, how many projects do you need to have in your portfolio?
Yeah, that's actually really tough. I mean, it to me, I think it depends on the work that you do. But I would aim for roughly like 5 to 7 projects, roughly, because you don't want to have too little. You know, if there's not enough work, it looks like, you know, you just don't have that much experience, right? And if you put too many things, it's like probably not all of them are even important to show. I think we talked about this on the other podcast episode, right?
Yep.
Where we talked about, like, you know, really, like, edit your work, or, like, edit the amount of stuff that you have in there. Because it's not like somebody's really going to have time to click through, like, you know, 25 different projects and read through all the documentation, and they're just not going to do it, you know?
Yeah, I would say just make sure that you are showing your what you can do. So, you know, definitely there's the upper limit. Like, you need to, you know, make sure it's not too many. But I would say it can be as little as three, even. Like, as long as they're really strong, you know, work, and there's a lot to see there, and they can get a nice cross-section of what you do, then I think that's how many pieces you need. But definitely it can get way too many, and at that point you're just, you know, it's a history, it's not a portfolio.
Yeah. Do all the projects have to be professional work?
This one, actually, I've heard both.
Yeah.
From hiring people who hire.
Mm-hmm.
And I really myself don't understand that it does. Like, some people say they should always be professional work. Like, don't put concept work in there. Don't put, like, I don't know, side project. I don't know, whatever. Yeah. Like, that to me doesn't make sense. Like, if that's something that you can do and you did it well, like, with a process, and you actually tried to solve a problem and everything like that, like students do.
Yeah.
I don't see why that shouldn't go in your portfolio. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think student work is a little bit different because, I don't know, to me, when I've reviewed portfolios, you can kind of tell when it's student work, but it doesn't have to all be just like, this is something I did for a company or a freelance project or whatever. I mean, I think, like you said, as long as it's relevant to what you're doing and it's something you did, and it's good, there's nothing wrong with showing it. But then at the same time, you want to be a little cognizant of, like, you don't want to put in, like, hey, this is a, you know, a little flyer I made for my grandma's birthday, you know, like, that's, that stuff's probably not what's going to be appropriate for a portfolio.
Because I think the conundrum a lot of designers find themselves in, especially when you maybe you get your first job and it's just a job, you know, it's not like this amazing company that you're doing a lot of great work for. Maybe you're the solo designer and, you know, you're treading water for a number of years. And so you come out of that and you don't have necessarily like these amazing work projects that everybody, it seems like everybody else does. So what would you suggest to those people? Like, do they just put in, you know, those projects, or also pair that with, okay, yeah, here's what I've done. Like, here's what I, you know, the stuff that I actually worked through and fought for and did. But then here's also like some other stuff that I'm capable of, like maybe visually, or wow, I made up a really interesting concept for a, you know, Uber ride type app or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, so I think definitely, you know, you'd want to put design projects in your portfolio. So that's one thing. Like, you'll see a lot of the time in, especially with new grads from design school or something, they'll have, you know, like, here's some drawings I did in drawing class, and here's a little sculpture thing I did in sculpture class, and then, yeah, there's a couple design pieces and whatever else. And, like, a lot of that stuff, while it's interesting, you know, if it's not really design-related, it probably shouldn't be in there. If you're looking for a design job, right? So I would definitely make sure that the work that's in your portfolio reflects the work that you want to do. And then if you don't have really a body of work to show, then there are a lot of ways to start, you know, making projects. You know, when I remember when I was a recent graduate, like, I literally just went on Craigslist and posted an ad there for, like, hey, I'll just do some design work for you, with the caveat that, you know, this is work that I will put in my portfolio. So, you know, that's basically my payment, is like getting, you know, basically filling out my portfolio with professional, sort of quote unquote professional work. And so there are a lot of different ways that you can, you know, fill your portfolio with things that, where you sort of have to work with other people to develop a concept and produce a piece of design. I think you shouldn't feel like you have to be in a company or, you know, even like a design school grad necessarily to start building out a portfolio. You just have to do design, and it has to be great. That's basically it.
All right, so the next section we have is, so how do you find the right company? And this is another huge problem. So yes, you finally, you're ready for a new job. You got your portfolio done. You chugged through the most difficult project of your design career. And then how do you find the companies that are going to be good? Like we just mentioned, a lot of designers find themselves in the treading water type jobs where they get it, the process is not that great, the feedback loops are not that great, so they end up doing some terrible work that they're not proud of, and they want something better than that. How do they find that?
Well, I think one of the first things is that you yourself, you have to be honest with yourself about what sort of work you're willing to do and what work that you're not willing to do. And that can be really hard in the very beginning because, you just want to start. You want to start making money. You got student loans to pay off, and you want to get out of your parents' basement and whatever. But yeah, I think it's really important to not just take whatever jobs that come up, because especially if you don't feel that it's the right position for you. Because I know even for myself, like I've turned down job offers that I thought, were reasonable offers, but just something about the company or, the team or the people or whatever just didn't quite jive. And so, I think you shouldn't be afraid of saying no to something.
Yeah, that's really important. It's really about what you say no to, because obviously you're going to say yes to the great job. So it's being willing to do the work that it takes to find the right to find and attract the right company, and saying no to the ones that other ones that come along. And this often is more is harder said than done.
Yeah, for sure.
But it still needs to be done. Like it's still, like you have to find a way to make that happen. So if you're going to lose out maybe in a lot of money while you wait, and while you're trying to really pursue one of these, better jobs, then that's something that you just have to either plan for or be willing to do, because, that's what it's going to take. So you have to do that. And sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow. We freak out. We want to get the next job as soon as possible. And, maybe we, in the couple weeks that we look, we get three interviews and that's it. Those are the three interviews. It's going to be one of those three companies. And that's the sort of the mindset that we take on, but that's not really the mindset we should think of. Okay. It's could be one of these companies or it could be none of these, and be willing to say, yeah, to be willing to say no. That's great.
I also think when you're evaluating companies, like you need to evaluate the company as much as they are evaluating you, because I think it's fairly easy for people to feel like the company is the one that has kind of all the power in this sort of dynamic. I guess interviewing is kind of like a relationship. But
Yeah, I think it is a lot like dating.
yeah, right? Because you need to sort of match with the right people and the right teams and all that stuff. But you really need to evaluate them and approach it as a, like you are also like in this relationship 50-50. So, you don't really owe them anything. If they request some ridiculous stuff from you, you're free to say no, and you don't want to continue talking to them. I think that's part of the saying no thing that we just mentioned. I also think that there are a lot of designers out there who are simply just like, I'm just looking to find a job, right? They come out of school and they're like, I just want a job. Get me a job. And I think that's
Yeah, they
kind of
don't
the
feel like
wrong.
they can be picky, like they don't have that luxury.
Well, right. And I think, well, but I think it's also the other side of it where it's like they just want to like just make money, and they just want to like UX is like a it's a trendy field to be in, right? It's kind of a buzzword, and there's a lot of people out there thinking like, okay, I'll just make a bunch of money that, if I go out and put myself out there as a UX designer. But the reality is it's actually a really challenging career. I mean, there's tons of articles out there about how, I think I wrote something about this recently, but I read another article about it where like they said there's no other jobs out there in tech where basically every single day you have people telling you how bad you are at your job.
Yeah.
Right? 'Cause what does a designer do? They just basically receive criticism about their work. So if you're going to look at this as just like, oh, I'm just gonna, I'm just looking to get a job, you might want to rethink how you're doing it. You really have to be passionate and want to do design as a career.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So what do I do if I don't really know what sort of jobs or what sort of companies interest me?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. There's I think there's a couple things that have helped me, and maybe you have some. I would love to hear, what works for you. But because at first it sort of seemed that the thing that excites everybody, maybe something that your friends might be using is something that's kind of cool, right? But like you can sort of just categorize that as something in its own way that okay, it's something that I'll that's sort of honorable in a way, like it's you get some status out of it because people, oh yeah, I know that, I use that, that's cool that you do that, or whatnot. So that's just a small perk, but there's so much that else that goes with it, so another thing that's really important to me that I've found out is if there's just a good process in place for design, which usually is indicative of a lot of other good things. Like there's probably good leadership at the company. There's probably good growth opportunities at the company. There's probably I will be able to do good work that I that I want to be able to do at every job I go to. So for me, hearing that there's like a really solid, good process that produces good work, that's like one of the most like that just that healthy design atmosphere is one of the biggest attractors for me. And then a third one, which kind of comes from the book I'm writing, is really it does it have some sort of more, I don't know, real impact on people's lives? Is it, yeah, is it substantial in any way?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, definitely, like, you don't want to be a designer at, like, whatever, like a nuclear bomb making facility. Or maybe you
Yeah.
do, I don't know. But yeah, I
But you've
mean.
thought about it. You have a reason and you understand that, okay, these are things that are important to me, maybe even ethically. And so I'm going to move forward understanding that rather than just blindly going in, okay, they're going to pay me. Yeah, I'm going to go do that.
It kind of segues into the next question of, like, what if I come from, whatever, some other field? Maybe I was a, I don't know, a marketer or something before, and I realized that I really like design. I like the whole design process, and I want to change and become a designer. So what do I actually do now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, someone asked me that recently on Twitter, a programmer, and we've actually talked about this a lot. It's really interesting. If you take a survey of a bunch of designers, I would say majority of them came from some other field. Like they didn't even start in that field. Like I came from, sort of like a TV animation background. Where did you come from?
I mean, I graduated with a design degree, so I was
All right,
already kind of
before that,
passionate
did
about it.
you work in any other, like, were you kind of off on another path and then decided to go to school?
No, actually, my
Okay.
undergrad is design.
Okay, so you're pretty much set. But I mean, like a lot of people, that I've talked to, like architecture is a huge one. Programming, I think, is another big one, especially specifically front-end programming, things like that. So I always say, yeah, like definitely go for it. And you bring a lot of those strengths with you, depending on how long you're in that type of job. You bring those strengths with you, and it really does make you a unique designer with a unique perspective. Like someone who has done architecture really understands a lot of interesting things about user behavior, maybe even about, how certain modules of things are put together or, flow within a space, they can kind of like, oh yeah, that's the same thing within the space of a UI or whatever. It's really interesting to hear those kind of those connections.
I mean, there's also, like, a lot of trade schools out there. That's another possibility. They also cost a lot of money. So, if you have, a few, quite a few thousand bucks just laying around, and you want to change careers, like, you might look into those. Or there's lots of, a lot of art schools and design schools, they offer extended education courses. So if you're just kind of curious and you want to check it out, Those can also be another good way to sort of get your feet wet without really sort of taking a huge risk and just dropping what you're doing completely. But those are some other ways that you can start doing things, or even just start consulting, or just start doing it, just doing it. Adobe CC is what, like $20 a month or something like that? I forget. $10 a month,
Yeah,
something
or
like that.
sketches, $100 one time,
Oh
or
yeah.
there's plenty of options.
Yeah.
Either creating a side project or, getting a client. You could, there's a lot of ways just to get started. And man, you do learn a lot on the job. All you need is one decent job and you will learn a ton on the job.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely just, keep at it and claw your way into it.
Yeah. So what about if I just graduated? Like, where do I even start? Like, how do I even know where to look or who to talk to, or what do I even do about this?
You mean like, do we mean like specific websites or?
I don't know. I mean, what is a if I'm a new, completely new graduate, like I just got my diploma or I just graduated out of trade school, like what is the thing? What do I do? Where do I start?
Yeah, I think my recommendation would be, to like a kind of multi-pronged approach. Like applying to the job sites is always one path that comes to mind, but there's always the other door, which is through someone, through
Yeah.
knowing someone at the company, through emailing them, just kind of a cold email.
Yeah.
And then one other thing that I've seen, you see it actually kind of once in a while. I'm surprised you don't see it more often, but it's the dedicated landing page route
Oh.
where designers will pick a company they really like and create a dedicated landing page for that company and maybe even post it publicly all over social media,
Yeah.
and really pitch why they're going to be amazing at that company and how much they want to interview there. Or it can be more private where they're just sending that link out to people on that team.
Yeah.
And I would say those three ways are, you're going to get something from one of those. Again, like cold applying to, through those things can be really mind-numbing because
Yeah.
they're just, and we're going to go over this in the next section about how they
Okay.
work, but it can be, I don't know, like 10, 50, 100 applications before you get an interview. And
Yeah.
those other options, it just takes, a few, even though it's maybe more work, but it just
Yeah.
takes a few. And sometimes you can get right into the door and get the interview. And then after that, it's of course just up to them. But, getting in the door is the hard part.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I would suggest is meetup groups. So finding topics or things that you're interested in hearing about, like in a meetup group, and then going to them and just sort of talking to people. This is probably, maybe the one time that I'll recommend LinkedIn is for like this kind of networking and sort of like business contact building. It's still pretty decent for that. There's a lot of people that use LinkedIn for that. So, don't be afraid to use it, even though the user experience is not the best in there.
I mean it's absolutely terrible. I can't wait for another thing to replace it, but it's there and it's established, so use that. But that does remind me, speaking of meetups and whatnot, like social media can be like a meetup. Like I've been
Yeah,
completely
for
surprised
sure.
by how useful Twitter's been with connecting with people from all over the world and
Yeah.
different, even outside of design, different walks of life. And man, it really helps to connect. Like somebody will, respond to me and bring in somebody else that they know, and boom, there's a connection there. Like it's happened so often that and job wise too, that can happen as well. Either
Yeah.
you've you're Twitter friends with someone for, a couple of years, and all of a sudden when you're looking for a job, boom, there, somebody at the company. Like it really helps to kind of have all those roots out before you even start looking for a job.
Yeah. Maybe we can answer this next question in the next section. But what if I've submitted my resume now to a whole bunch of different companies. why haven't I heard back yet?
Yeah, let's pause on that. Let's go into the next section because it is very, I think, very heavily related, especially if you've submitted your application through one of those systems.
Yeah.
And so the next section is how to apply for a job. And like we mentioned, there's different approaches. Like we mentioned, there's applying through these sites, which we'll go into a little bit more depth. Mm-hmm. There is, networking through meetups, through, cold LinkedIning. I don't know what they're connecting with them. I don't know what it's following.
Whatever.
People on LinkedIn or messaging people here and there all over the internet or finding their email, what have you. And trying to get in the door that way, maybe even a recommendation from somebody who works there. And then of course the dedicated landing page pitch approach.
Yeah.
But let's talk specifically about the, you wanted to apply at Google, you want to apply at, Cisco or whatever the place is, and they have a system that you have to apply to.
Yeah.
So I've been doing a lot of research on this for my wife specifically because she's a nurse, mm-hmm. and they all of the job applications are systems. So,
oh really?
Yeah, like when I've applied to design positions, like it's like there's sometimes they're in these like management systems, but sometimes they're a little bit more simplified. Like, oh, just put in your resume, write us a box, and and then put your contact information. And that's it.
Yeah.
But these ones are like, the Taleo or like some of these other systems. So how do you effectively apply for those jobs can make it so that you have a better chance of hearing back. Because the number one, and actually probably the sole reason you're not hearing back, is that they've ranked their candidates and you're not, in the top rank of people that they want to pursue for phone interviews and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily mean you're the not the most qualified candidate, and that's actually the biggest, I think, the biggest thing here is which is these system why these systems are terrible. is there was a study done, I should have put that in the notes, but there's a study done by one of these marketing groups, and those systems don't always bring the most qualified candidates to the top, because you really have to know how they work in order to effectively put yourself into the system so that it can properly rank you against the other candidates.
Yeah. How are they ranking you?
Yeah, so the way that the ranking works is kind of like SEO.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So they often will read or scan your resume, and it should be like a text resume. A lot of times designers get caught up in the PDF,
with
a really nicely designed, maybe Sketch or Photoshop, a nice, really nice resume. But for design, it's awesome. Like, or in person, it's like killer. But for a robot, it's like nightmare. It doesn't figure out anything, right? So having like a text-based resume for those really helps. And then really going into the keywords like you would do in SEO. So, all the skills that designers are required of designers, what you do, the kind of software that you use, all those types of things should be in there.
Mm.
And another thing you should do is look at the job posting and really look at the keywords and the types of requirements that they have there and make sure that that's somewhere in your resume, if you need to rewrite certain things that you did at certain companies to match those types of keywords, et cetera, et cetera. That can really help you get ranked better in those types of systems.
So why not just copy paste it from the job description?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could. Eventually, a human's going to look at it, though.
Oh.
That will help you get ranked, and then, I was tempted to, get white on white text, like text white background, paste all the keywords like 10 times, like the old, back in the old days of early Google where they had like black hat SEO.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think eventually, human's going to look at it. So, and it is like, you are those things. So you might as well just use their terminology and get those points. So if it is one of those systems and that's a job that you want to pursue, I highly recommend JobScan. And
Okay.
I'll include a link. And you can put in your resume, put in the job posting, and then it'll tell you, oh, your resume matches, 80% against the posting, and here's some keywords you're missing, and here's keywords you nailed, et cetera, et cetera. So that can really help. And it's kind of weird, and it shouldn't really work that way, but it's like that's how those systems work.
I'll write that down. Job scan.
Yeah, job scan. So, if you're, especially Taleo and a lot of those other systems that are, they just want like a ton of applications and then have the robot scan it and just give them the good ones. That's what's happening. So you just kind of have to get, work the system. All right. So, anything you have on that one?
In general, I try to stay away from those like HR systems just because
Seems like a time suck, yeah.
it's so much work and it's just a big black box. Like you just don't know, like because it's so like automated, right? You don't necessarily know if the hiring manager is even gonna see it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think personally, I've had the most success applying for a job whenever I've like used recruiters or talked to people as part of the process.
Yeah, definitely. Like we said, those three different ways, like applying to jobs cold through these systems is definitely the least effective, but it's still another way. So it's something that
For
you should
sure.
keep
I
pursuing
wonder.
if you can. And sometimes it's the only way. Like you can't work your way through Google. You can still get a rec you can get a recommendation, but you have to go through their system.
I wonder if you could make money starting a service that all it is they submit your info to these HR systems. Like you
Yeah,
hire a
like
company.
on their behalf.
You just hire a
Yeah.
company. Like we'll just blast your resume into like 1,000 companies' HR systems.
That's a great idea. Everyone's listening. Don't take that, 'cause I'm gonna take that. Yeah, like that. It's such a pain, and you have to do stuff over and over again. And it's weird because all these systems don't really talk to each other, and that's what really we wanted from LinkedIn, right? Like that's what LinkedIn's supposed to be. It's like, okay, here's all my stuff. I'll put it in once. I'll just connect with all these systems, and it'll instantly go in, and I just maybe write a different cover letter. Nope. Only usually works with like partial information. All right, so cover letters. Cover letters, I think, are really, really important. People do read them, if not after they scanned them and decided whether or not this is like junk or not. But I think once you're in the interview process, for sure, and maybe even before then, they're reading them. So once you've gone through the filtering process where you're in the top group of candidates, they are going to start reading those cover letters, and that's what's really going to make a big difference. So there's a couple strategies you can do for this. I think one of the really effective things that I've experienced is, and you can do this also during the interview, is choose a small subset of things. Maybe it's three, maybe it's five, I would say somewhere in between there. Things about yourself that you want to constantly reiterate so that they remember something about you. So maybe it's, the fact that you designed something and increased revenue by 200%. Maybe it's the fact that you know how to code, really you can do front-end code or something. Like there's these specific really strong things about you, and you just keep, if every, in the cover letter, in the resume, in person, in the question about like tell me about yourself, in the question about tell me about your time at X company, like you're constantly repeating that information in different ways. And so by the time it's all said and done, and all these they've interviewed like five people, and they're all kind of blended together in the person in the team's mind, and Tom interviewed these four people, and Susan interviewed three, two of the same but like one different, and and then the group comes together to decide. It's really helpful if they remember you and they remember those things.
Sure, that's really good.
Another strategy you can do for the cover letter is the pain, and also again for the interview is the pain point.
Yeah.
Identify like how hiring you is going to solve some issue or major issue in the company. Say, hey, you know, if you hire me, I'm really good at, you know, untangling, you know, bad experiences and fixing signup flows. Like, I'm really good at that. I'll fix your signup flow, and here's how I'm imagining it done. Or, you know, I'm really good at working through your backlog. You know, I know that's an issue for you right now, and, you know, whatever. So that can be really effective too. Another thing that can help is keeping track of all these jobs that you've applied to in Excel.
Yeah.
So that when they call you back, you can refer to what you wrote them and, you know, remember what was said, things like that, and what stage these different things are at, so you can check up or not check up or whatever.
Yeah. That's super important. I did that, I don't know, a few years back when I was like doing some serious job hunting. I definitely kept like a big spreadsheet of like, okay, I submitted to this thing on this date. I heard back on this date. I replied via email on this date. All this stuff just to track my performance basically on like how I was doing. And it helped me not just like stay organized with everything, but it helped me get into a habit about looking for work and applying to things. And I actually found that applying for jobs didn't need to take like, you know, all day. Like I could just do it for like, you know, a few hours a day. And I would sort of meet some quota or whatever of how many companies I'd apply to. And then really the rest of the day I could get back to like working on my portfolio or doing some other things, or just, you know, having some time to myself or whatever. So definitely keep track of all the jobs you apply to, because it's really, really important.
Yeah, I really like what you said. I think it's good to have a agenda for your days, like when you're looking full time.
Yeah.
To not, you know, it can be tempting to like apply to everything on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, to you know, really hone in, like I'm going to apply to these specific ones, and then to really spend your time wisely with, you know, improving your pitch. So, you know, improving the way your resume looks, your portfolio looks, doing a side project so that, you know, maybe you're getting rejected now, but maybe after, you know, 2 weeks of searching, all of a sudden your 2 weeks of work, you know, has paid off with a new side project, or your portfolio looks a lot better. Yeah. And now you have a better pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Let's see what else. Anything else on that you should go over?
You wrote some stuff about resumes, and I wanted to bring up this point about resumes and like, don't make it too fancy. You want like your resume should be designed for clarity. Like I need to read that thing and understand like what you've done and all that kind of stuff. There was a big trend recently about infographics resumes. Like don't do that. Don't but ever do that.
How am I supposed to convey that I know 43% of HTML? Fuck.
That's a good question. I don't know.
And actually, back to the computer scan thing, is like that doesn't mean anything to a computer, and doesn't really mean anything to a human. So it's not really that effective. Yeah.
So yeah, that's if there's any one tip, like don't do an infographics resume.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people are tempted to do is put everything that could possibly be a plus on their resume, you know, like, okay, yeah, I know HTML, CSS, I took it one class in JavaScript. I don't know, like they try to put like, I also do calligraphy. I also do this. I also do that.
Hey, I
some
do
things are better left for the interview. You know, you don't need to put everything, like really try to hone it down to what's, you know, checking off all of their requirements and then using all the other stuff, other space to really sell them on your accomplishments. And you know, they're when they're looking at a resume, they're looking for two things. Are you qualified? And, you know, are you going to be a good fit? Maybe even the third one is like, you know, are you a superstar? But I think really they're just looking for, are you qualified? Are you going to be a good fit? And like, that's really what it comes down to. Like when I've hired like for most companies, they're not looking for superstars. They're looking for people who are qualified to do the job and are going to fit well within the team. And so, like, if they are confused with all this other extra stuff, that's really just going to detract from your qualifications and your fit.
Yeah, totally, for sure. So you've done a good job applying. You eventually landed an interview. So what is that interview process like?
Yeah.
Interviews, you know, it can be a long process. They're like, especially these days, like you generally have like quite a few different rounds of interviews. You know, it depends on the company, of course, but definitely don't expect that, you know, getting an interview sort of will quickly get you hired. It takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of generally the way it works is that there's probably going to be some sort of initial phone screen. So you get on the phone, you talk for 30 minutes with probably a recruiter or an HR person, just so that they sort of vet who you are. And then, assuming you don't sound like a raving lunatic, you will get a phone call with the hiring manager, and then maybe like one or two rounds of like in-person interviews. And there could be a lot more than that, but it really depends on the company and the general hiring process that they have.
Yeah. Yeah. And overall, like if you're looking for a job, it's like, it's always a month away. Like it's because, you know, these things usually like there's like a week for putting, they put the job posting out. Maybe they'll wait a week to, you know, capture some fish there. And then they'll do some phone interviews for a week.
Yeah.
And then they'll do maybe interviews the next week. And then they'll pick somebody and they'll do negotiations for a week. So it's always like 4 weeks away. Yeah. You know, it's a long process.
Like that's at a minimum.
They don't move that fast.
Yeah. Plus, you know, the hiring manager is busy with projects and, you know, he's managing the team. Well, he or she is managing the team. And so, you know, this is like hiring is just something that people have to do when they have time, even though it's like one of the most important things for
or actually even growing when they don't a company. Have time or because they don't have time, you know, they're like, shoot, we need more hands on deck. And it's really hard to get their attention because they're busy and that's why they're hiring.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, and it starts out with a phone call, sometimes with the recruiter first or the hiring manager first, and then with the, you know, the people you'll be working with.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes higher up, depending on the size of the company.
Yeah. Most interview processes these days involve some kind of like design exercise that you'll have to do during the interview. And this is basically how companies weed out sort of undesirable candidates. And I think, you know, it's kind of loaded, that term of like weeding people out, because to me, like when I was hiring people, I didn't really rely on these like exercises to sort of like trick people and like try to like test their like thinking skills, because I didn't think they worked very well, to be honest. I think even Google has sort of backed down from that. Like I read something about how they admitted that those things don't really work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fortunately or unfortunately, it is a sort of standard practice nowadays for hiring designers to sort of put them through some like weird exercise that kind of has nothing to do with the actual job that you'll do, and just be prepared to answer some weird questions.
Or even has too much to do with the company, you know, like,
right.
That's actually, I felt sometimes the weirdest is like, okay, design, you know, redesign our sign up page or do this flow for us or whatever. And those really should be paid. You should really, no one should be asking you for free work in that way. And oftentimes it's really hard to say no, especially if you actually are interested. And sometimes that can maybe be a filter for you. One is it should definitely be a red flag about their process and values. But let's say you're like, okay, this is actually something I really want to do. I would mention it to them. Sometimes they're not ignorant of it. And you say, well, can I work on something that's not related to the company? Do you have another problem I could solve? Yeah. You can work with them to, you know, make it so it's a little bit more legit there.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest reason why I never really believed in them is just because, like, you will never have a project, a real project from this company that is going to be like the way the design exercises are set up. Like, you will never have a task to redesign an entire signup flow in like 30 minutes.
Or like they always say like, oh yeah, you know, don't spend more than an hour on this.
Yeah.
You'll hear that, but like, then you do, if you only spend like an hour on it, which is like what, like sketching, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I never like, got that. Like, I'm obviously not going to spend just an hour on this. Like I want to impress you. And actually there was one time where I was like, maybe they really mean it. And I spent an hour on it and they were like, yeah, this is just like really underdeveloped. I was like, okay, never mind.
But it's like, what do you expect? It's an hour.
Yeah, you said it's been an hour. Like, what do you expect me to do in real life? Yeah. And another thing, you're right, it's not realistic. Like, another thing that I've done, like, and I've actually done those types of things is they know everything about the company and the project. Like, they've been doing this
exactly.
For 5 years or something.
Yeah.
And you don't. So it's like, you're just running into all these like problems and they're pointing them out and, so it doesn't necessarily mean that's not useful for them, but most of the time it's not because they think you're struggling, but really it's just because you don't have their information yet.
Yeah.
When it's something that neither of you guys know, they're like, oh yeah, I didn't think of that either. Like he was really, you know, insightful there. But if it's something that they already know everything about, it's just you stumbling in the dark.
Yeah.
Like you would like the first week or something, but then yeah. After the first week, you would know all those things.
Yeah. But design it in an hour.
Yeah, but do this in an hour and
better be perfect.
Let's see what you come up with. You have to blow my mind somehow.
Yeah.
Within an hour of sketching.
Yeah.
Knowing nothing about our company that we do.
Yeah. So even if you did really, really good in the interview and you got through it all, it's still never a guarantee that you'll get an offer at the end of it.
Right. But let's talk for a little bit about what are some strategies you can do to be at a better advantage for possibly getting to the offer stage.
Yeah.
And I think, like we mentioned previously, you know, reiterating a couple things about yourself throughout this whole process is definitely, definitely going to help. You need to be memorable and you need to sell yourself. A lot of times we answer the question. Mm-hmm. That's given to us. And this is actually pretty relatable to just the rest of design and maybe even life. But a lot of times where we just answer directly the question that was given to us and that's it. You know, maybe we make it sound nice, but for the most part, they say, what did you do here? And you tell them what you did there. But there's this whole other part of the interview process, which is about framing the questions, redirecting the questions, and bringing up things that they didn't necessarily ask for, like, you know, answering your own questions. Yeah. So these can be really effective. So like I said, maybe they say something about, you know, tell me about your time at this company in your past.
Yeah.
And they didn't necessarily ask for, you know, all these like accomplishments or something that you did there, but that's something you want to cover. And, you know, like maybe they didn't ask you about whether or not you know how to code, but maybe you sort of start hinting at it and bring it up during that time. Like you said, oh, I prototyped this thing with code and, you know, just over lunch, I sat down and coded up some JavaScript. You know, you're kind of throwing out those words to kind of bring up those things that they didn't necessarily ask for. You know, maybe you are really good at mentoring. And that's not, they never asked you about mentoring, but, there's different ways you can kind of redirect questions to bring it up. Yes, I like to, you know, learn and mentor people and, you know, whatever. And you sort of start to morph those questions into, bringing up those things. And especially if it's those, you know, four or five things that you chose, it could be really good.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, don't make it comical, but it should be good.
Yeah. Another thing you can do, and it's not anything like too crazy. It's just when you're done with the interview, send them a thank you letter.
Yep.
You know,
a real
email.
One, like, not an email.
Yeah, or a letter. Yeah.
Yeah, an email at a minimum, but like I think like, especially us designers, like if you like write really well,
yeah,
or you know, draw really well or something, like and any of those type of things can be good. But even if you don't, like just buying a classy card and writing a handwritten thank you is huge.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't believe like how many people like don't do that.
Yeah.
Because I remember like when I was hiring, like some people do it, but the ones that I remembered were the ones that definitely did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know why people stop doing it. I think it sort of feels like cliche, like something that you do on like a novice does or something, but it's always been effective on me, and I always feel like it's effective when I use it. So it's like, why not do it? And if you do it in a classy way, or you do it in a way that's like shows some of your skills, like if you are good at calligraphy and design and typography and all that, and you do really nice card, or maybe it's even a custom card. Oh my gosh, that'd be awesome. You know, that's just another weight on your scale against all the other candidates.
Yep.
Yeah, so hopefully you'll get to the last stage and they will offer you money.
Ooh.
Imagine that.
Sounds good, yeah. So how do you actually negotiate a salary? This is really the probably the hardest part, I'd say, of this whole process.
Yeah.
At least it is for me.
Yeah, it is for a lot of people. It's like one of those like really high stakes things, like betting almost or something. Yeah. It feels that way. Like you have to, it does take a lot of skill. Like it's not just a set formula because it's negotiation. So, there are a lot of things that you can utilize, but it's like knowing how much to push, how much not to push, knowing how much you're worth, how much they value you, how much they need you, what the market offers. I'm like, there's all these like little factors you have to do at the same time.
Yeah.
But there are a couple things to know.
Yeah.
What would be your recommendation on this?
Well, so when negotiating, so the way in which it sort of works is the salary that you can negotiate for depends on a whole bunch of different factors. So one is just your relationship with the hiring manager. If you irritated them or something, or you said something weird during your interview, like maybe they might think twice about giving you a much bigger salary, right? Another thing is your years of experience working. So if you're a recent grad, having 0 years of experience, you know, puts you in a certain pay grade in most companies. Similar to that is your education level. So if you have a bachelor's degree or a master's degree or a PhD, those things determine sort of how much the company is willing to pay you for whatever work you're doing. The other thing is, of course, the position. So if you're applying for a junior position, you're going to make a salary within some range, versus if you're a more senior designer and you're applying for a senior position, of course, they're going to offer you more money. So, well, and of course, the last factor is, of course, how much money the company actually has. So, so all of those things combined is what goes into defining what an offer is, you know, that you get. And so in preparation for that, they're going to ask you for a number, right? During the interview process, they're going to ask you like how much you want. So in order for you to negotiate properly, you need to start doing research. So what would that mean? So you should go and ask your friends and other colleagues what they think is a fair range for your experience level, or, you know, for what type of work that you're doing. Another thing that you really need to do is look at your expenses and whatever you need to be comfortable in your lifestyle, and probably pad it a little bit, but don't go crazy padding it, but look at that and like try and assess how much that cost per year and figure out like what is reasonable for compensation for a salary. And so, you know, when you're talking about this stuff, like, you know, sometimes in the initial phone screen, the person will ask you for a number. Do whatever you can to basically don't give them a number, because once you give them a number, you are locked in. So if if you said, okay, I want, $80,000 a year, well, guess what? That's what they're going to lock you into. Even if you get through the entire interview process and everything, and you did a super job at convincing people you're the best person, they'll just offer you 80,000 because that's what you said. So yeah, all of those factors, and you need to do research. I would say if you really do have to quote a number, quote a high number. Even if it seems scary, just quote a high number if they really press you to it. Because negotiating up from a low number is like extremely difficult, if not impossible.
Yeah, it definitely makes you seem like you're backtracking on your word. You know, if you said 80,000 and they're like, oh, okay, and you're like, no, actually 85,000, like it just seems like you're almost like a liar in a way. So yeah, starting with a higher number and letting them come back with another number usually is a way to find what they're willing to pay. You know, like I always say with like people, when people ask me about contracting work and asking for rates, it's like if you're getting a quick yes, that's like, oh, usually a sign that you didn't give a high enough number. So if they're asking for a number, so let's say like, yeah, definitely in the beginning don't give the number, but let's say during the offer stage they're saying, okay, what's the number there, then you should definitely start with a higher number. But oftentimes they'll start by giving you a number, and so what range they're looking for, and so you can bring a counter offer. And I think one thing that really has helped me, especially if maybe you're a little bit nervous about this type of thing and you don't feel comfortable, is coming up with your number range and your reasons. So one solid reason can be all the designer surveys that are out there. So find a survey that properly represents who you are. So yeah, I'm this type of experience level and I'm in this location. And if there's more than one, that's great. And then during the negotiations, you can say, hey, listen, like the average designer in, of my skill set or whatever, in my area, makes 80,000. And I hopefully you think I'm more than an average designer, so I should be worth above that, So I've used that line before and it worked. So if you want, you can use that line.
Oh,
And
nice.
so that way, at least you should be getting more than the average. And then if you're shooting for something that's more than that, and maybe your past job, that you can say that you can point to your past job. So I kind of find one of those two things being really strong. So either your past job paid you X and it's been, you can also say there, you're like, hey, listen, I've been, I was paid, let's say 70,000 at my last job. I've done X, Y, and Z since then. And it's been it's been a year since then. And also like, this job is farther away or whatever it is. And you can kind of combine all those things to give your reasons of why you think this number is right. Another thing which a lot of people don't think about is not only is the dollars per year negotiable, but there's all the other stuff is negotiable as well. So days off is negotiable. How many days per week or month or whatever you work from home. Things like that can also be negotiable. And you can even get down to like weird details, like you have a stipend for, education or whatever it is. And like you can, really work on those things, especially if it is like maybe a smaller company that can't really offer you a large paycheck, but they can be flexible. So figure out, what works for you. So those things can be way more valuable. Like having a day off could be way more valuable than the money that would have been given to you in the future. So think about that too.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, and especially if you're, if they help you with education and stuff, like that's just like adding to your product of you. Like you're becoming more valuable over time anyway. So that stuff is actually very valuable. Don't write it off as just, $100 education stipend or whatever. It's actually worth more than that in the long run.
Something I wanted to point out is that if you do quote a high number, It's possible that you may lose out on an offer due to quoting such a high number. So I think it's just a reality of the whole process. Like if they're not willing to negotiate down, and they just want to cut negotiations at that point, you just kind of got to suck it up, I guess. Or, if you really like the job or you really like the people, maybe there are some other sort of more intangible qualities that maybe make it worth your while to accept maybe a lower offer than what you originally quoted. But in general, I think as long as you do your research and you prepare well enough, and you understand what sort of a fair market value is for what you're going to do, you generally should be fine. So I think you shouldn't really be afraid about quoting something that may seem a little high.
If it's not totally outrageous, if you have done your research, like feel confident giving that number, even if it is, 30% more or something like that. Like if they're lowballing you like crazy, like don't, and you know that this is the number is a good number, like you've done your research, like don't feel bad, like especially sometimes there'll be a miscommunication of like what they think, designers are worthy, and you've proven your point. Like there's no reason you should feel like you're gonna lose that job. And especially if you do it in a tactful way, you're giving your reasons, you're saying it in a nice way or whatever. I've never had, I've had, oh no, we can't go that high, but they usually want to work with you. They've invested a ton of time finding you, getting you. They like you. You're the best. So they have a, they have, and this is like something that's done with every position, that they do. So it don't feel like you're burdening them. Like this is something that's going to take a couple extra minutes out of their time and a couple of minutes out of your time, but it's going to be worth so much time and money, over the long run in your life. So it's worth doing. That being said, I also think you shouldn't be careful on how much you're going back and forth with them. Like that's one time I've like, now that I've been in the hiring process on the other end a few times, that's actually one thing that will turn people sour towards a candidate less than a high number or crazy ask. Like that's funny. This like I've heard like really high numbers and we're like, okay, whatever. How can we make this work? But the one thing that actually does turn people sour is going cycling back and forth, like, okay, we get the number. We finally got the number after like four emails, and then now they're going back forth about, stock options, and then now they're asking for, days. Like it's just like get it all together at once as much as you can, and it should really only be a few back and forths and be finished.
Otherwise, it's just not the right place for you.
Yeah, I mean, if it's them doing the extra back and forth, sure, but if it's, make sure it's not you.
Yeah, for sure. So what if I have accepted a low offer and I'm now having second thoughts about it? What should I do?
I would suggest, talking to your manager and, laying out a roadmap for you to reach the higher number. Again, come with the why of why you think you deserve that much, and then pick a time. Say, okay, in 6 months I want you to do a review and we can see if I've met your expectations, and then you can pay me that much. I think that's really good, is put a date on it, get it in writing, and ask for it.
Yeah, totally. That I agree with that.
Yeah.
Because if it's something like this where you've accepted an offer that, is much lower than what you wanted, but you want to try to like negotiate it up, you're gonna have to come with some reasons and a rationale and really try to work with them to like get it to where you'd like it. So definitely putting a plan together that is like measurable and that sort of gives them some proofs about like why you deserve more than what they originally offered, then yeah, that's good. So also, what if I found out that my coworker makes X amount more than me for the same job? What do I do then?
Right, yeah. I mean, a lot of times they're gonna hush hush about this. Buffer apparently is opposite, is completely transparent, and everybody knows what everybody makes. It's like a formula. But yeah, in general, most of the times it's nobody really talks about it, but then you do find out, and it really, that's one of those things that can really weigh on you. Like it, you start to see everything through those lenses, even though you really shouldn't.
Yeah.
Because they maybe negotiated better, or they just have more stuff on their resume, you know, like, that makes them, you know, get that number.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make them necessarily a better designer than you, but like that, you sort of, you know, it does weigh on you. So you have to take into account that they could possibly be quote unquote worth that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe they've been in the industry 5-10 years longer than you have, and that's why they're getting mm-hmm. more. So, you know, or maybe they are better designer. So yeah, definitely think about that. But you know, let's say all those things have checked out, and no, like they're junior to you, and they're making more money. then what do you do? You know, I think it really comes down to the same thing as above, which is you know, that we just talked about, is, you know, laying out your case of yep. why you think you're worth X amount, and asking for a roadmap to that number.
Yeah. Totally agree. What you do not want to do in this situation is say, well, so-and-so makes much.
Don't rat them out.
Why don't I make that much? Like, yeah. Don't turn it into a comparison. Make it a, hey, I would like this much more in my salary, or this much more time off, or whatever the thing is that you want to renegotiate about your compensation, and try to put a plan together. Work with your manager to put a plan together to help you achieve it.
Yeah, and if the reality is that, you know, there's some weird stuff going on there, and they don't want to give you that, you know, it might be another way to get a large increase is to switch jobs. Like, it's just the reality of,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know why companies are that way, but they are. Oftentimes they won't give large increases to their own employees, but they will to a new hire,
yeah.
which really doesn't make sense to me. But anyway,
yeah.
that is the reality. So sometimes, yeah. you know, if you are, you know, you've worked with your manager and they just, you know, you're just hitting your head against a wall, then it might be time to look elsewhere to catch up to what your value is.
Mm-hmm. This last question.
Sorry. I think another quick thing that can be really a sticky situation is, let's say you do that and you tell your manager to give your 2 weeks notice. And this is something that I've heard from friends, and actually quite a few people, this has happened to them, which is, you know, you're asking, they don't really, you know, give you a lot of promotions. They don't give you a lot of increase in pay. So you say, okay, mm-hmm. this is not really matching up to where I want to be progressing. And so you go to another company. They love you. You go through the hiring process. They give you an offer. And so you go to your other company. You give them your 2 weeks notice. And yeah. all of a sudden, they love you. They want to give you more than what the other people offered. They're asking how much they offered. And they want you to stay. Yeah. What do you do then?
Oh, man.
And yeah, I've heard this quite a few times. And I think what I would do is, I don't think I would ever stay.
Yeah.
I think it's, again, like, you know, if they weren't willing to give it to you before, for one, then I don't think that situation is as good as it should be. And then it'll probably be a weird dynamic once you stay anyway.
Yep.
Unless you really, really like it there, and this was the one thing that's going to keep you, I really don't think it's a good idea to stay.
I think once you've, like, said you're leaving, like, you can never really, like, come back from that. And even if you like the company, like, you should, once you've told your manager or something that you're quitting, like, that's pretty much it. Like, even if they say, like, yeah, okay, you know, we'll renegotiate, blah, 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 it's always going to be in the back of their minds that you are sort of on the cusp of leaving. What I would do, you know, if they're willing to sort of counter offer your 2 weeks notice, is negotiate a time frame for leaving. So instead of 2 weeks, maybe it's, you know, a month or something like that. Like, mm-hmm. and be sure to involve the new company as well and say, hey, you know, they don't want me to leave in 2 weeks. You know, can I have a month or whatever? You know, just work it out between the two companies. Like, what's the time frame on actually leaving?
Good point. Yeah, and you know, sometimes companies don't give you a ramp, but I think it's always classy and a good idea, you know, to have good references and things like that, just to always work with them to have a comfortable ramp for them to find somebody else. 2 weeks is the standard. Sometimes, you know, like, you're really important and, you know, maybe 3 weeks is needed or something, and they will really, really appreciate it if you stay on that extra week during the ramp. So, you know, definitely make sure you leave them in good hands and don't just like leave and take your stuff in and out in like 2 days or something, and they're left scrambling, because that will put them in a bad position and eventually put you in a bad position, because you need to continuously build these bridges.
Yeah.
And also just decency. So. Cool. All right. So we've covered quite a lot here, you know, from, you know, the portfolio to applying for the job to interviewing and negotiating your salary once you get the money.
Yeah. There's one last question that I think deserves actually a full episode. And it'd be great if we could get some actual listeners, or, you know, maybe we can bring Melanie back on for this one. But the question is, I am a female, and I feel that salaries for women in my company are much lower than my male counterparts. What can I do about it? Now, we've heard already, like, there's tons of articles out there, especially around, you know, not just in the Silicon Valley, but pretty much everywhere, right? That, you know, women in tech or women in corporate jobs or just women in the workforce in general, they make far less than their male counterparts. And so I spent a bit of time, you know, talking to people that I know, and it was actually kind of telling, because I don't know that many women designers even. I don't know if it's just because of me or like the social circles that I hang out in, or the fact that there aren't, like, I just don't know where to find women designers to talk to. But the people that I did talk to, there were sort of like three main things that kind of came out of this that I found. And first of all is, of course, the perception that women are paid less. It's hard to tell sometimes, because a company may not necessarily reveal the wages and salaries of everybody. Not every company is like Buffer, where they publish everything all the time. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely the perception that women will be paid less. The other two things that I found were, it may not necessarily be that they get paid less, is that they have fewer opportunities to advance, which is maybe even scarier than the salary thing. And what does this mean? It means that there's fewer women seemingly advancing into like senior or manager type positions. You know, maybe you've seen this yourself, where, you know, a lot of the managers tend to be male, or especially executive managers, things like that. And lastly, it's the sort of what I've called the share of voice. It's that in meetings or whatever, like, women's voices tend to not be heard as much. Even if the male counterpart says exactly the same thing, people will listen to the men over the women. And it's not necessarily like an overt thing, like people are specifically like ignoring women. It's that there's like a lot of subtle things that happen in discussions and whatever, where people tend to sort of just disregard sometimes what women say. And so, like, after talking about this with a lot of different women designers that I, like, one of the first things to help address this problem is really the transparency issue, right? When a company actually is transparent about the problem itself, right? Like, if the company actually spends time doing research to understand the problem and, like, shares that information with the company, like, that will go a long way to, like, start, like, fixing this. Because, like I said, there's the perception issue. people believe that people will believe that, you know, women get paid less. So it starts by being transparent about, well, are they or aren't they? And if they are, you need to sort of reveal that and share that and own up to it. And in general, I think that companies that don't prioritize this sort of gender equality issue, they eventually end up failing anyway. Because, like, think about it this way, like, women make up roughly 50% of the workforce. That means 50% of the talent that's out there is female. Like, just in terms of hiring in general, you're chopping your available pool down by 50%. So why not, you know, focus on this as a solution to this problem of hiring, like that you can hire women and put them in positions of power and seniority. You know, like I said, I think we need to have maybe some more women designers on the show to really get into this more.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Because I think, you know, this is really just, like, I literally asked, like, you know, 4 or 5 of, like, my close, like, female friends who are designers about this stuff. And this was kind of the information that I got back. But this is by no means, you know, an in-depth, you know, a research project that I did.
Yeah, when you read the question off, my thoughts were, you know, you, like, what do you do? It's like, yeah, what do you do? I mean, like, yeah. that's the question, right? Like, because, yeah, there's stuff, I mean, maybe there's a way you could, you know, just be, you know, really, whatever, like, give a really better case. Like, no, like, they're already doing that, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just a matter of the way that, you know, the people think about just women and different groups. You know, like, we have our biases. So it really comes down to the other side. We have to break down our biases. We have to start thinking about these things in different ways than we already do that are sort of ingrained in our brains. Mm-hmm. And just, like, get over that and be more transparent. I think the transparency does help too, just with all of that, you know. It's, yeah, if there's, like, a set formula for this, or everybody knows, you know, what it takes to get to these certain pay points or whatever it is, I think that also kind of just solves that particular part of this issue. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's worth bringing up, because I've heard a lot of different stories now, you know, shared on different posts, and you mm-hmm. know, it's not the fact that a lot of these people aren't, or these women aren't asking for, you know, raises a lot of time or positions. It's like, a lot of times when they do, they're viewed as, like, too bossy or whatever it is, and they're, you know, the same thing that men are doing isn't viewed in that way. So it's just sort of, like, gets skewed into that way of thinking, and then they don't get the that promotion or whatever. So it can be kind of tricky, and definitely isn't where it should be right now.
Yeah. So yeah, if I don't know, if you're a woman and a designer and would like to come on the show,
if you're a woman, yeah, we definitely would love to. I think it'd be great to do an episode just on that and hear more about that. Cause we also, and I kind of get more off on the trail here, but, you know, there was a thread on Designer News about, someone made a Tumblr about just highlighting some sexist comments from Designer News. And there was,
I found that
really eye opening, because
yeah,
I had, I don't know, like, I guess I hadn't really seen the cross section.
Yeah.
Of views on the subject in the designer community. Like, I've seen it discussed a ton in the gaming, you know, the gaming development.
Yeah.
And design. I've seen it in programming, and I've seen it, of course, like, in business. But I guess I hadn't really seen it in my own as much.
Yeah.
You know, like, we talked to a couple other people about this, and they had mentioned it, but, like, yeah, and then so seeing that cross section of designers' response to that was really interesting. Like, you had the people who were like, "This is wrong," you know, like, you shouldn't, yeah, you shouldn't, like, call these people out. Like, this men, why do you have to attack men or something, you know? And then all the way to, like, people who, you know, kind of understand, like, what's going on and this needs to be improved, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. Yeah, it was it was nice to see all that because I think that it's something that we need to start addressing in a more serious way. We aren't, any different than any of these other industries. Like, we have the same biases, so we have to work on them and get better at them.
I mean, even just in the conversations I had in putting this together, there was just a ton of stories that people were sharing with me about stuff that had happened to them that, as a man, like, I just, like, stuff that never occurred to me was happening, especially because, in meetings, for example, if there's questions about a design, like, people just sort of naturally look to me for answers or something when, maybe they'll ignore the women in the room. And it's one of those things where you don't think about how that's happening or why that's happening, but for them, they notice it, And yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. Like, these are things that definitely need to be brought out more, I think.
And I think another really important thing to note, and this is something, because I tried to write about this in my book, and it was funny because I gave it my best, and definitely, like, my co-author was reviewing it, and she's like, yeah, this is kind of sexist, actually. And I think it's really important to know. And so I think actually what that kind of morphed that section into is like, hey, like, listen, like, we all have a range of bias. Like, it's not like I'm not racist, but I'm sort of, like, to be honest, like, there's biases that are in my brain that I have against certain people who look certain ways. And that's, like, something you have to, like, be cognitive and work through. And it's not like you're one or the other, and because then you'll if you think of it that way, you'll be like, oh, well, then I'm not that. Like, I'm not a KKK member. I'm not a sexist, like, guy who's like, thinks of women as just as objects. Like, so I'm not that. So I'm not at all. So, but that's not true. It's like you really have to, view it from, like, okay, where am I being, my treating people differently based on just the way that they look, and what, why does that have any, why does that matter at all? All right. So, yeah, we should definitely have a whole episode on that, 'cause this was a good topic.
Some
All right.
future show.
So yeah, future show. So yeah, so that's our job hunting episode. We hope that you found it useful. If you would love to hear more about one of these things, please let us know. You can contact us. Or, again, if you have a idea for a show that you want us to cover, let us know. And as we mentioned, if you want to provide a comment or a story for that episode we just talked about, please reach out as well. You can contact us through Twitter. I'm DesignUXUI, and Chris is MachineHuman. And then we also have a contact form on our website, designreviewpodcast.com. You can find our iTunes link there, and you can always, of course, just follow the episodes straight from the website. And also,
You can do a search for design review
yeah,
on
on
iTunes.
Twitter, on
On iTunes?
on iTunes to find us on
And
iTunes,
Twitter.
design review, and leave us a review. Also, if you are interested in trying listening to audiobooks and things like that, especially there's a lot of design books out there. You want to listen to one while you work. You can support the show that way. You can click on the link on the sidebar of the site and get a free audiobook and a free month of audiobooks.
It's a great way to support us doing the show.
Yeah, and I think that's it. Anything
That's
else?
it. No, that's it. This was a long episode.
Yeah, sorry it was a long episode, but there was it was like three shows in one. So
Yeah.
hopefully you got a lot out of it.
Yeah. All right.
All right,
Cool.
thanks everybody.
Thanks.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.